This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, there are two narratives that are emerging, and the one is that Ethiopia is being pressured to amend its position and be more accommodating of some of the Egyptian interests and proposals. But the other narrative is that, in fact, there is pressure being applied to all sides to try to find a middle ground.
That's Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, on the status of negotiations on the massive Ethiopian Nile River Dam project. Details coming up. Also, after a three-day visit in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo flew on to Saudi Arabia today. The Human Rights Office is calling for an investigation into the massacre of 23 people in Cameroon's northwest Anglophone region. And because of the coronavirus outbreak, Nigerian authorities are calling on business people in the country to restrict travel to China. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has urged African leaders and communities to adopt new ways of doing business and trade to bring jobs and prosperity to the African continent's people.
None of this is easy. If it was easy, it would have happened long ago. The United States recognizes this. But it's moral, and it's right, and it's necessary. There's nothing more noble than allowing our people to have the dignity of work. In the United States, you should know, every one of you, that we believe in you, and we'll be with you every step of the way. With the right policies and leadership, we believe that true economic liberation will happen here in Africa. If you will all focus on the basics, if you'll get it right, if you'll get transparency right, good governance right, American businesses will come.
Pompeo made the comments in a speech and question and answer session today in Addis Ababa as he wrapped up his three-nation tour of Africa. He explained that his choice to visit Senegal, Angola, and Ethiopia on his first trip to Africa as Secretary of State because of the changes going on in those countries that the United States wants to support.
Leaders in the business community, leaders in the entrepreneurship world, finance leaders, non-governmental organizations who understand that the things that have been done in these countries in the past didn't deliver the outcomes that these people so richly deserve and are determined to push back where there were problems with corruption, who are determined to deliver these outcomes and are prepared to take real risk to get these fantastic outcomes for their own people.
He also said the U.S. will continue to work with partners in Africa to build security. He said the current U.S. review of its military operations in Africa is part of a global process, but that the United States remains committed to African security.
We are constantly reviewing our structure. Are we delivering value? Are we really increasing security? Is the model we had for the last 10 or 20 or 30 years working? And so we're looking at that. We're looking at Africa. We're looking at other places in the world as well. We'll complete the review. We'll work it out. There won't be big surprises. We will work alongside this. I appreciate, as someone who was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, I understand the risks in the Sahel, what goes on in Libya. I know what's happening in the Lake Chad region, and I see the challenges in from al-Shabaab in Somalia and
After 3 days in the Ethiopian capital, Pompeo flew to Saudi Arabia today, where he said he would be discussing regional security issues. Today, South Sudan's Council of Ministers adopted President Salva Kiir's decision to return the country to a system of 10 states with the addition of 3 administrative areas ahead of Saturday's deadline to form a unity government. Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Government spokesperson Michael Makwe says following the meeting, the ministers directed Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila to amend the provisions of the revitalized peace deal and to incorporate the 10 states plus 3 administrative areas into the transitional constitution.
After being discussed, it was passed by the cabinet and directed the Minister of Justice to prepare it and table it before the cabinet probably this afternoon so that it is adopted by the cabinet, because there is no room for further extension, but there is room for the establishment of the revitalized Chigono.
Makwe says after the cabinet has amended the constitution, President Kiru will sign it into law on Friday. The SPLM-IO deputy spokesperson, Manoa Peter Gatkoth, says with the new 10 states plus 3 decision by the president, the SPLM-IO is not opposed to forming the unity government by the deadline, but says the SPLM-IO wants to see that all provisions of the deal, including security arrangement, are completely implemented.
At least 90% of the outstanding issues, at least we handed them, like position of 10 states, which has been taken by the president, and we welcome it. And also we put our some observation, especially about Ruweng. These issues should be on the table. They can discuss it. They can reach agreement on it. It will not prevent that people should vote the government in next week.
Makwe says, although some activities scheduled to be implemented in the pre-transitional period have yet to be completed, the unity government will be formed.
There are for the VIP protection force, it is here, it is ready in Gorom, and can be graduated even tomorrow or next month. There is no, and they will be deployed. There are VIP protection units, and they will be here in Juba to protect the VIPs. That is one. Number two, the unified forces that are there, some of them are graduated, others are not yet, are trained, others are not yet, but they will be trained. So we cannot wait and hold the establishment of the government hostage for some provisions of the agreement which are not yet established.
Makwe says establishment of the government will not be held hostage for, in his words, some provision of the agreement which is not yet established. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The UN Human Rights Office is calling for an independent, impartial and thorough investigation into the massacre of 23 people in a village in Cameroon's northwest Anglophone region last Friday. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
More information has emerged since this shocking attack occurred. UN Human Rights monitors on the ground report 15 children, 9 under the age of 5, were killed. They say 2 pregnant women also were among the victims. One has since died of her injuries in hospital. UN Human Rights spokesman Rupert Colville says the facts are still sketchy, but he tells VOA witnesses say 40 armed men and members of the security and defense forces attacked the village.
The authorities claim there was gunfire coming out of the village towards them, towards the defense forces and gendarmes. Our understanding, 2 houses in particular were targeted. But the upshot of that, the number of children killed and pregnant women, is really horrifying.
Hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced, and clashes between security and defense forces and armed separatist groups have escalated since 2016. That was when a separatist insurgency erupted in the minority English-speaking northwest and southwest regions of Cameroon against the dominant French-speaking government. In the aftermath of the massacre, the Cameroonian government has announced it would mount an investigation into the killings and would make the findings public. The UN Human Rights Office urges the authorities to ensure the independence and impartiality of the investigation and to hold those responsible to account. In the meantime, the United Nations reports 2.3 million people in Cameroon urgently need food, shelter, non-food items, and protection because of the crisis in the northwest and southwest. It adds the majority of those in need remain within these 2 regions. UN aid agencies are urgently appealing for $317 million so they can carry out their life-saving mission this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A Kenyan security official confirmed to VOA today that four people were killed when suspected Al-Shabaab militants attacked a bus in northeast Kenya. The Somali Islamist militant group has carried out numerous deadly attacks on buses and vehicles in the area as retaliation for Kenya's military presence in Somalia. Raya Lambor reports.
The bus was carrying passengers from Mandera County to Nairobi when it was attacked. The bus is said to have left Mandera in the morning, and the attack happened at about midday, according to Onesmus Kiata, Mandera's county commissioner.
A bus that was destined to Nairobi via Moyale was attacked between a place called Hola and Saraman, which is in Mandera North constituency. That is Mandera North sub-county. And we understand the criminals. These are armed bandits, suspected criminals who sprayed the bus with bullets. And in the process, we understand three passengers lost their lives.
Mandera is bordered by Ethiopia to the north and Somalia to the east. Kenya sent troops to Somalia in 2011 to fight Al-Shabaab alongside the African Union mission in Somalia with forces from at least six African countries. In retaliation, Al-Shabaab militants have launched countless terror attacks in northeastern Kenya, along the Kenyan coast, and even in Nairobi, in a bid to pressure Kenya to withdraw its troops from Somalia. Kenya security forces have heightened security in terror-prone areas, but this has not stopped the attacks. Last month, Al-Shabaab attacked a joint U.S.-Kenya base in Lamu County, killing three American military personnel. Around Mandera, Al-Shabaab fighters have launched several fatal attacks. In July 2015, at least 14 people were killed and several others wounded in a gun attack near a military camp. The victims were workers from a local quarry in the area. Onesma says a quick response by security personnel has saved lives before, as was the case in today's attack.
The police were able to move in fast from their nearby police units, which are also based in around those areas. So they were able to move very fast to the ground and to ensure that they secured the rest of the passengers. That is what I can confirm. The bus had about 35 passengers, which left Mandera in the morning.
Al-Shabaab's deadliest attack in Kenya came in April 2015, when gunmen stormed Garissa University and killed 148 people, most of them Kenyan students. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Uganda has acquired two aircrafts to boost the fight against desert locusts that swarmed into the country last week. The aircrafts are to be used for aerial spraying. The highly destructive desert locusts have ravaged countries in the east and Horn of Africa and have now been reported in 17 Ugandan districts. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
For 6 days now, Uganda has been using hand and motorized pumps to attack the desert locusts with insecticide. However, most of the insects have avoided the insecticides by staying in the treetops and out of range of the pumps. That has led some workers to burn bushes to chase them. Now Uganda has hired two aircraft from the Locust Control Organization to help kill the locusts before they hatch. Bright Raminama is Uganda's State Minister for Animal Husbandry.
The aircraft was cleared yesterday and is going to be stationed in Moroto. We hired another aircraft for backup in case we get more swarms. We have two aircrafts that will be spraying and one helicopter from the UPDF, which is surveilling and mapping areas where these locusts have been sighted and where we suspect they have laid eggs. And we believe when these hoppers hatch, we have the capacity to really kill them.
The aircraft are to operate between Uganda's Karamoja region and Kenya's Turkana area. Raminama says the chemical needed for spraying should arrive soon.
Unfortunately, we do not have the chemical in the country and in the region for aerial spray. But the good news is that we have procured the chemical and it will be in the country in 3 days.
According to Raminama, the existing swarms are now classified as mature locusts and not cause significant damage to the vegetation cover. However, experts are warning of an imminent threat to food security if their eggs hatch.
The locusts which entered here are yellow. Yellow means that they have reached maturity, they can lay eggs, and after laying eggs, they die. The eggs hatch between 10 to 14 days. We are now counting 6 days, and we know in 14 days, if the weather is conducive for their hatching, then we shall have the hoopers. The hoopers are the ones which eat a lot of food and the destruction of crops and pasture.
Antonio Cureiro is the Food and Agriculture Organization's country representative. He calls for constant vigilance to ensure the eggs don't hatch.
So what is required from us now is for us to really have a system that monitors the hatching aspect to ensure that we are attentive to the next phase. The hatching takes about 10 days, and then we have a window of another 30 days where they're still without wings, and they're really easily manageable. So no reason for panicking.
A female locust is said to lay at least 300 eggs in one sitting and thrice as many in its life cycle. The nymphs and young desert locusts, mainly pink in color, that are expected to come after the first hatching are the most dangerous since they have high need for food. FAO says the situation remains extremely alarming in Kenya, Ethiopia and Somalia. Food security and livelihoods are at risk. Other countries that have reported locust infestations include Djibouti, Eritrea, Tanzania and South Sudan. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The Trump administration has reportedly pressed Ethiopia to find a peaceful resolution to its dispute with Egypt over the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, which is nearing completion. Ethiopia's foreign ministry said U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo expressed hopes that talks on the dam would bear positive results. Egyptian Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry said Egypt expects a final and fair agreement on the dam and that the U.S. pledged to propose a final draft to Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, about whether the U.S. is placing pressure on Ethiopia to agree to terms to Egypt's liking or if it is pushing both countries to compromise.
Well, there are two narratives that are emerging, and the one is that Ethiopia is being pressured to amend its position and be more accommodating of some of the Egyptian interests and proposals. But the other narrative is that, in fact, there is pressure being applied to all sides to try to find a middle ground. And I think it's notable that the latest proposal was crafted with a significant input from the World Bank. And so there's a valuable technical dimension to this. And with that understanding, there's a recognition that both Egypt and Ethiopia would need to find some middle ground. And, this is by and large focused on the rate of filling of the dam. There's concerns that if the dam is filled too quickly, that it will affect the downstream availability of water usage for Egypt. And so that's been the focus of the discussion and how quickly and at what rate that filling should take place.
So far, the U.S. was very helpful in facilitating major technical problems. Could the U.S. be able to draft a final agreement acceptable to the three countries?
I think the question will come down to what we mean by acceptable. It is increasingly apparent that whatever final agreement is reached, it's not going to be ideal for any of the parties. There's going to be some dissatisfaction from Egypt, from Ethiopia, and likely from Sudan as well. But, I think it is important to remember that this negotiation is part of a years-long discussion involving a technical committee. So there's a strong technical basis for these discussions. And I think as long as they can keep coming back to that, there will be grounds for some compromise. But I think the bottom line that the leaders in both countries are going to have to come to terms with is that they're not going to get everything that they wanted in the way they wanted. And so they're going to have to begin to prepare their citizens that this is the best deal they can reach. and that it'll be workable. I think that's the main message that having the U.S. and World Bank involved in negotiations is that all interests are being considered and final agreement would be taking those interests into consideration.
Ethiopia's Minister of Water, Irrigation and Energy said if there is a single word in the document to be signed that could compromise Ethiopia's right to use the water, Ethiopia will not sign the document. What are the possible scenarios if the agreement was not signed later this month?
I think that statement is largely pushing back because of the perceived pressure that Ethiopia was receiving. In the end, these are hard decisions, and we have seen previous deadlines missed and new deadlines set. And so I think there's a big push to try to come up to an acceptable agreement this time, but it would not be surprising if it slipped a little bit more. In the end, whatever agreement is reached is going to have to be signed off on by the respective water ministries and foreign ministries of each country. So there's going to be some more dialogue and consultations that happen back in each capital. And I think, too, it's important to remember this is one step in a process. There are other issues that will need to be sorted out, further conflict resolution considerations, what to do in times of drought. And so we should look at this moment as one point in time and not as the make or break decision-making point for these negotiations.
That was VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Chenawi speaking with Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Bill Androdi, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.